This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's our weekly review of the news and events that are affecting the tri-state area. And this week, we'll be analyzing Tuesday's local elections and discuss what their results could mean for our region over the next several years. Before we get started, WVXU's Bill Reinhardt joins us now. He has an update on the trial of former UC police officer Ray Tensing for the shooting death of Sam DeBose. Bill, good afternoon. What's the latest?
Good afternoon, Mark. Well, just in the last hour, there was a flurry of activities. Jury has been here since about 8 o'clock this morning deliberating. They started deliberations earlier this week, and they're still at it. And as said, just in the last hour, the attorneys for both sides, the prosecution and the defense, and Ray Tensing himself, all came to the courthouse. The jury was brought in, handed the judge, Megan Shanahan, a question that said, we cannot come to a unanimous verdict on count one or count two. Those charges are murder or voluntary manslaughter. And the question was, please advise. And Judge Shanahan says, look, I know this is hard. This requires patience. It's very slow. None of us out here know what you're going through. But I can tell you that absolute certainty cannot be attained or expected. But whatever decision you come to as individuals and as a group, it must be sincere. It must not be acquiescence. We want this decided, she said. We want a verdict out of this because you have to realize no other jury will be able to do a better job than you can, and there's no new evidence. There's nothing going to change, so we need to get this cleared up. We need to get this finalized this time. So she sent them back in with the suggestion that each juror should reexamine their views. The jurors who are ready for acquittal, she told them to reevaluate your doubts and see if those are sincere doubts. For those who are ready to convict, she asked that they took a look at how they have been seeing things and see if there is doubt that they have ignored so far. So she sent the jurors back in, and she said, defense attorney Stu Matthews, I have received your a question from you that's believed to be his move to dismiss for mistrial, and she did not rule on it, but she said, I have received it.
Bill, did the jury give any indication as to what the holdup is, why they can't come to a decision?
Well, there's a lot of speculation because the only other question we've heard from the jury was late yesterday afternoon when they asked for the transcripts from the experts on police use of force presented by both the prosecution and the defense. So there's a lot of speculation among the press corps here. That means they are hung up on whether the definitions of use of force are justified and whether murder should apply or manslaughter should apply.
Now, this is what they've been deliberating for about, 15 hours at this point?
It's a little over 15 hours, I believe.
Yeah. Any indication of how much longer it might take or if they'll continue deliberating into the weekend?
That was one thing that Judge Shanahan pointed out. Because of the way the process is, nobody outside the jury room knows what's going on. No one can speculate how long this is going to take. She said, you know, we know this is difficult, but keep at it.
Bill, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Anytime.
WVXU's Bill Reinhardt, and stay tuned to WVXU throughout the afternoon for updates on the Ray Tensing trial. And joining us now, as we look at Tuesday's local election results, our Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist, Chris Wederick, local politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jason Williams, and WCPO.com, WCPO insider government and political reporter, Amanda Seitz. And you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jason, Chris, and Amanda, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's start with the Hamilton County Commission race. Hamilton County Commissioner Todd Portune, he retains his seat by beating Andrew Pappas. Denise Driehaus beats Dennis Dieters in an extremely tight race. In fact, in the unofficial count, Amanda, I think she has, a 0.5% point?
It is actually 0.48% of a
point. So not even quite 0.5%.
Yeah, which is why the provisional ballots will really come into play here. They're waiting to see the result of those before a recount is triggered.
So there are, about 13,000 provisional ballots, and then they may or may not have an impact?
Yeah, I think we heard 12,000. They're supposed to lean Democrat. So at this point, what we've heard from everyone who's involved in the race, except for Dennis Dieters, who challenged her, is that they feel confident. Even the Republican county chairman said that he feels confident Denise Driehaus will win this seat.
Yeah, I talked to Dennis today for the first time since the election, and he's actually not conceded to her
right yet.
I think he expects, I think, to be beaten, but at the same time, it's a 1,700 vote gap, roughly, and I think there's probably always hope.
You never
for some
know.
People. Yeah. this is really, I think, kind of an underestimated sea change at the county. I mean, really, all the issues we talk about, MSD, transportation issues, economic development. Basically, what we have in Hamilton County and Cincinnati now is a situation where the Democrats have the controls, and there's no real Republican decision maker in terms of legislative or executive branches. I think that's going to be an interesting situation to watch.
And what was it last time there was a 2-1 majority for the Democrats? It was 2006. Yeah,
with 2006 David Pepper.
Through 2010, I think. So
right, and yeah. I mean during that time, you were in the Great Recession, and Pepper and Portun spent a lot of time cutting government. I mean, they did try to raise taxes, but mm-hmm. they were not successful in doing so. So they ended up acting really like Republicans would act, I think, and cutting government down to the bone at the county.
Well, that was an interesting thing. I did hear from some Republicans that they suspect that Todd Portun and Denise Driehaus actually might butt heads a bit on the commission because she's a little more conservative. That happened with David Pepper and Todd Portun, that sometimes Greg Hartman and David Pepper would team up against Todd Portun. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, but you got Chris Monzel as the Republican now, and he's very uber ultra conservative. Mm-hmm. So I don't see Denise and Todd butting heads as much as Todd and David did.
Now, Jason, if this holds up with Denise Driehaus and Dennis Dieters, as far as her winning this, and they had that 2-1 Democratic majority, does that mean Todd Portun is then the commission president?
I don't know how that works. Actually,
I was wondering that this morning.
I think they'll choose between the two of them.
Yeah,
I can't imagine Portun isn't the president for the first year of that. I think they switch that off at least sometimes. So
here's
it's really kind of a technicality,
Right.
I'll tell you, the one thing I find interesting is that the way the trends have gone in Hamilton County is I don't see the Republicans regaining this control of this.
Like ever?
Yeah.
You're talking about the Board of Commissioners?
The Board of Commissioners, yeah. I mean, now we're – I mean, it's a blue county. I mean, not officially because the Republicans still hold a majority of the judicial seats, but I don't see the Democrats giving up control of the Board of Commissioners like they did after Pepper left in 10.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, Jason, because I remember the time where this was considered to be a Republican stronghold, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hamilton County, and it's just over the past few years shifted in the blue direction.
That's why I wouldn't count Republicans out necessarily in Hamilton County. I mean, we saw such a quick shift from Republican to Democrat. And I think a lot of that does have to do with the top of the ticket for Republicans in this round. I think you have a lot of John Kasich-style Republicans that maybe didn't turn out on Tuesday and weren't enthused by the ticket and didn't bother to vote. So I think when you have less of an unusual ticket, and who knows if we ever will again after Tuesday, Republicans might have a better chance in the future.
I was really struck by, the turnout was pretty good in Hamilton County. I mean, the Democrats were off by, I believe it was, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 from their total in 2012, and the Republicans had a similar margin, although you saw a lot of degradation in the number of their votes. I think a lot of them went to, some of them went to Gary Johnson, and some of them didn't vote. But Hamilton County was really well organized by the Clinton campaign in terms mm-hmm. of Democratic turnout. They hit their number more or less, I think, what they wanted to do. I don't think that they thought they were going to equal Obama's turnout, but they came pretty close. And so, I think it was kind of an article of faith among some of the political community that as long as she came pretty close to Obama's number and, they had a good turnout and they won Hamilton County, they could win the state and win, win the election. And that is not what happened. Hamilton County was an outlier compared to what happened in the rest of the state.
I mean, take the top of the ticket away. Like, there were, if this wasn't a wake-up call for Republicans, which locally I think they should have already had, I don't know what's going to be. There were, I mean, particularly thinking about the clerk of courts race, Tracy Winkler really didn't do a whole lot. And I think really rested a lot on her big name, and Aftab Puraval kicked her butt. And I mean, part of that is he raised a lot of money and he out-hustled her and he had great creative ads. But you got, part of that is that, you know, you got a big name like that. She didn't really run a very aggressive campaign, and it caught up to her. And there were a couple other Republicans that happened to as well.
She wasn't on the offense and she wasn't on the defense even. Like, I called her and it was just like, man, the hell with you. I mean, it was like I called her basically, and I
So you're saying she was complacent? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot of Republican local candidates. I mean, look at, listen, Joe Dieters, you know, he was giving his campaign signs to his brother. You know, he wasn't running a campaign, not that he needs to, but it just shows. I mean, I don't think, other than Dennis Dieters, there weren't many Republicans running an actual legitimate campaign here that were on the ballot. And like Jason said, that should be a wake-up call for them. They lost a judgeship, too.
Yeah, that one, that's another one I'm thinking about. And that was Maryland Zias Davis, a newcomer, edged Peter Stoutberg, who's a big name, former state representative.
That one still has to go through provisional.
Actually, I think it was a 3-vote difference than the Dieters. It was right around 1,700 plus than Dieters' Driehaus. But I will say, I thought Dennis Dieters did run it. At first, I didn't think he was running a very good campaign, but he ultimately did run a very good campaign. He pushed it a little later than what Denise did. Mm-hmm. I don't think that wasn't what cost him the race. So.
Now, Jason, you were saying that it was a pretty substantial defeat in that clerk of courts race. What was the margin that he beat her by?
53-47.
It was a land. I mean, a lot of circles, that would be considered a landslide. I mean, I was about to say earlier, I submitted questions to Winkler in writing, which I probably shouldn't do. That's not typically how we do election coverage, but I was trying to be nice about it. And Winkler didn't bother to answer them. She didn't bother to say, you know, it was a simple question. What do you want to do with this office in your next term? It was really kind of a straightforward question, and she really kind of ran an arrogant campaign.
I know we invited her on. We actually, we have a weekly show. We invited her on. We ended up just having Aftab on because she, we tried to reschedule several times for her. We offered to pre-record the show, and she canceled several times. So to your point, I mean, she just had no presence at all.
Same thing happened with me. Like, I called her, and she emailed back, like, later, and I'm like, okay. Frankly, Aftab is very much higher, more qualified for the job than she is, and take away politics, and it's certainly an administrative role. Like, he's an attorney.
What did you think of Aftab's commercials that he was
You know, he was reluctant to do it at first. He thought that people wouldn't take him seriously, and his campaign folks convinced him to do it. And it was a nice touch. I thought the first one, the duck appeared a little too much, but in the end,
the duck saying Aftab.
Interesting. Like, on Twitter the other night, after, you know, we were posting that he won, like, I had like 3 or 4 people, right? Like, that's why I voted for him. The duck was awesome.
The duck.
Yeah.
Tim Burke was saying yesterday that he actually had lost about 5,000 votes, I think it was, compared to other Democratic candidates in the primary, and that he was told, make your name work for you. And, I mean, that's just an example of how he really did turn that around.
One thing that Burke said also that was interesting to me the day after the election was, you know, I kind of gave a lot of credit to Hillary's campaign and the way that she had organized it, and they had a very, very strong ground game, right? They had organizers calling people, going door-to-door and whatever. And so I said, well, Tim, it just seems like you guys were beneficiaries of Hillary's campaign. Is that going to kind of keep up? And he said, well, we had our own coordinated campaign. And he didn't want to deflect praise from Hillary, but he also wanted, I think, to take a little credit because they had coordinated their campaign. Jason's written a lot about this for really the first time in a real way. And so, you know, you saw that at the early voting, you know, the Democratic candidates were handing out their judge ticket with all, because it's very, if you're a Democrat and you want to go and vote for all the Democratic judges, it's not on the ballot, their party affiliation. So they know that they have to get literature out there saying, here's our list of judges, vote for them. And it only worked for, you know, for Marilyn Zayas, and not for the other judges, but you know, I think that they'll learn a lesson from this and make sure that they coordinate their campaigns in the next election in 2 years as well.
Chris, do you think the stories that came out about campaigning within the clerk's office, you think those hurt Tracy Winkler in the end?
I don't know. I mean, it was, you know, I'll tell you what, City Beat's reporter on that is just did a bang-up job, and that's where most of the coverage was. We followed up a little bit on that. I, you know, the Inquirer did a little bit. I don't know if that penetrated the consciousness of voters until maybe the last weekend before the election when AFTAB put it in an ad. I'm just not real confident that City Beat and ourselves reach as wide an audience as the Inquirer and the large, you know, and the TV stations. But I think when he put that in an ad, it might have pushed his percentages a little bit higher. He may have already been there without that, though.
Jason?
Yeah, I don't think it – no offense to City Beat, but they don't really have a lot of influence, certainly the type of influence that the three media outlets in at this table have. And so I don't really think that did a lot. I think that the coordinated campaign, which also David Pepper and the Democratic Party was a part of, the top of the ticket, and just flat out like just – you know, rolling up his sleeves and getting after it and raising a lot of money and putting over 30,000 miles on his Jeep Grand Cherokee over 13 months. And I think it also showed that hard work, you know, I mean, we're in such a time now where maybe the whole name recognition thing has been turned upside down. And I think we saw it in this race.
The fundraising thing is really key, I think. He gained a lot of credibility with attorneys in town.
I think I heard he outspent her like 5-1 or something like that. It was a big number.
It was a big ratio. So he raised a lot of money, and that got the attention of the legal community, which has always been kind of reluctant to buck the Republican establishment at the courthouse. And one of the, if you look in his campaign finance reports.
By the way, what exactly does a clerk of courts do? I mean, I think
we should probably talk about that,
yeah,
right?
We should.
Basically, they are the clearinghouse for every legal document in the county, in both the domestic relations court, common pleas court. So the courts that are in Hamilton County, all of that material goes through them, and it's been considered. Tim Burke said it. It was a Republican clubhouse for a lot of years because there's a lot of jobs there. There's a lot of kind of low skill clerical work, and those are people that you know you can then get to volunteer for your campaign and. You know, do parades, do door-to-door stuff. So it's a good kind of patronage-heavy place, something that Purval has pledged to kind of break up. So it's a key office. If you're involved in any way in a court case, you know, if you get a traffic ticket, you're going to end up dealing with that office. And you want it to be friendly. You want it to be accessible. You want to be able to get the information that you need. So it's kind of a boring office, but it's also a really, really important one, I think.
Yeah, it plays a very crucial role. Yeah.
But as for his fundraising, you know, he tapped a lot of donors from the Indian American community. And that's something you find in politics, too, when, you know, when a kind of a racial group comes to political maturity. You know, he tapped into a network of funds of fundraisers or people that would give him money that probably had never donated to politics before, and that's probably going to help him in the future as well as he looks to other political races down the road in his life, which I think he will.
He has
do.
A big future.
Yeah. So you think he caught the attention of the Democratic Party?
Oh, absolutely. They had him out in front of, I mean, when Bernie Sanders came to town, when they did the early voting thing. I mean, they made a point to. Put him out there introducing these people. And that, I mean, that on some level, that kind of made us wonder, is this just a run to get your name out there? You know, and I think he was maybe a little surprised, too, that he won this position as well. So, but definitely a bright future.
Democratic Party has high hopes for him, big time. I think they see him as David Pepper has been trying to build what he calls the bench of candidates and locally, and he has to do it locally.
Because they don't have anyone statewide.
Right. And so I think they really view this guy as a potential statewide candidate someday, you know, maybe attorney general candidate.
And AFTAB was the president of the Ohio State University Student Body. So that's usually
one of those kids, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's oftentimes seen as a launching point for a strong political career. So,
yeah, for sure.
Josh Mandel was former Ohio State president.
I'm trying to think who else has that whole college student body presidency thing. I mean, that's obviously
Micah Camrus. I mean, he ran
Micah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, the Camrus brothers.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. So, Amanda, I'm wondering about your thoughts on this, because Chris started to touch on this earlier. What do you think are going to be the priorities now that we'll go back to the commission? Since the commission has shifted, or looks likely to shift, to this two Democrats to one Republican situation, what do you think are going to be the priorities for county commission?
Yeah, they're going to be a lot busier than they have been, I think, over the last couple of years. Sewer is obviously number one on the list.
So whole dispute over the Metropolitan Sewer District.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think right away city and county will be having different talks than they have been over the last couple months. The other thing that's kind of like a curveball one that maybe people don't expect coming is economic development. That's been something that Todd Portune has just really been begging the commission to get more involved in and for the county to put more funds toward. And I don't know that Denise will be as aggressive as Todd wants to be necessarily, but she definitely, I mean, her whole television ad, right, was based on being a partner with the county, needs to be a partner with businesses. So I definitely think the county will be more aggressive with, I know Todd's big thing has been getting sites ready, for example, for new businesses to come in, that sort of thing. And then another one, it would be children's services. I think we'll maybe see some different approaches to funding for that. This will be, with the levy passing, it'll be 25 years now that they've gone without an increase if it stays the same over the next 5 years. So I think there will be different discussions about what kind of funding children's services gets.
Chris, what do you think are the priorities? What do you see as being the what will happen with a Democratic Hamilton County Commission?
You know, I think the things Amanda said, and particularly with MSD, you know, they have been at loggerheads with the city, the county has, for, you know, years now. And so they're in federal court right now negotiating kind of the future of that. And I'm sure your listeners are, you know, remember how this works. It's a very strange arrangement where the Metropolitan Sewer District is, you know, the legal entity is owned by the county when the city runs it on a day-to-day basis. And so that unusual.
And that's what the dispute is about, right?
Mainly, although, you know, a lot of it, you get into the nitty gritty of it, it has to do with how they're going to comply with the $3 billion plus overhaul that has been mandated by the EPA, you know, regarding the sewer district. So, you know, I think that Todd and Denise will end up being, you know, maybe a little bit more cooperative with Mayor Cranley, although Tim Burke warned me that, you know, they're not going to roll over for John, and John is not going to roll over for them. So there
but
might.
But do you think the relations will get any better?
Yeah, I do. I think that all three of them have pretty good relationships.
I know John told me on Tuesday night that he planned to spend most of his time at Denise's party, so I'm sure he was very thrilled to.
Yeah.
John's always going to fight. He's going to fight with someone, so. That's just his nature.
Well, he's got a primary coming up, so he can fight there.
Jason, what's your perspective on a Democratic Hamilton County Commission?
Well, piggybacking off of what they said is I also think you'll see them attack the heroin epidemic in a little different way. I think, you know, especially with a Democratic sheriff, there was going to be probably some teaming up there and creating a treatment center in the jail, which is something that the Republican majority and currently on the Board of Commissioners is pushed back on. That said, this is just my opinion or my assessment is that I don't think there's really been any politician who's locally who's really genuinely tried to attack the heroin epidemic more than Dennis Dieter. So he certainly is worthy of credit. His thing has been just to sort of really try to formulate a very bigger picture long-term plan before you really dive into it and spend money. So, but I think you might see the Democratic majority spend money and spend money faster on it.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon, Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wederick, local politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jason Williams, and WCPO.com, WCPO Insider Government and Political Reporter Amanda Seitz. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jason, what do you see as being the future for Dennis Dieters?
I've been asking that question, and I don't think they've figured it out yet. This total gut feeling on it would be that he would try to make another run at commissioner, and maybe in the meantime,
especially if it was so close in the first place, yeah.
I could see, and this is not really having looked at that district, but I could see him as a state rep potentially. And in between, I don't know, like in Corrine Township, I don't know if he would go back to being a trustee or not, but I know he's very passionate about like that local government thing. So I don't know, like, if he would want to do the state government.
Yeah, he's kind of a can-do guy. I just think serving the legislature would be extremely frustrating for anybody who's kind of, you know, used to, I mean, even in a township trustee situation, you are basically the executive branch, even though you have an administrator running the day-to-day items. And I just, you know, maybe Monzel hangs it up and he runs for that seat in 2018, or, you know, who knows. Just kind of a limited number of places he can go.
And I think he's got a bright future, even though there is a limited. He's really good. He's not, I know he got kind of a labeled early on, or maybe even still, that, you know, he's like Joe Dieters, and he's really not. He's I'm not slamming Joe at all. Like, you know, Joe's such a call like it is, and, you know, bombastic in some ways. But that's not Dennis. Dennis is very much more not a super political guy. He's very much more into the policy part of the job.
He's an introspective guy.
Very much so. Yeah,
he's very thoughtful.
You know, AFTAB is the obviously an up and comer on the Democratic side. Are there any new faces that you see with a lot of potential on the GOP side? And where does the Hamilton County GOP head after this?
Boy, they've got some soul searching to do, I think, for sure. That was another thing that really struck me, that Alex Triantafillo, the Republican Party chair, said that he actually speculates that some people in very Republican-heavy districts voted for Denise Driehaus. So they've really got to be evaluating kind of what their message is. I really think they can take a page, too, from the Democrats on having that coordinated campaign. I think that was something that Republicans kind of underestimated and wrote off as like, oh, whatever, they're making a big deal about hiring one guy to run all their campaigns. But Republicans in general both parties need to get their message together, but Republicans in general need to kind of, here's what we stand for, that sort of thing. And I think that would serve them well, having a coordinated message here in Hamilton County as well.
I don't think they had a lot of people with big futures on the ballot. I think their best candidate locally is Amy Murray, who's on the city council right now. She is a person who has worked across party lines. She has done a lot of, you know, she goes to all kinds of community meetings every week. And, you know, you expect that of city council members. But she, you know, you hear about it from other people other than her. She's out there doing that. And, you know, she's just a person that people really generally seem to like, even though they take issue with her on certain stances. Jason wrote a column the other day about, you know, her kind of dodging LGBT votes. And I'm sorry, I should explain what that is. So votes that the city council has taken in support of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people. You know, she's looking out for her future in terms of a Republican primary, you know, that she'll probably have to run in. So, you know, I think she's pretty smart politically, even though that might seem, what Jason described, might seem craven and opportunistic. But it's kind of what she has to do to live in the Republican Party these days. So I think she's got a pretty bright future. And I know that they've talked about her as a statewide candidate as well at some point.
Yeah, I was at an event earlier this week, and someone made a joke to her about running for mayor. It's like, you don't want to waste her on mayor. Like, she's, you know.
Lieutenant governors, kind of the recurring to be.
Really?
Potentially Mike DeWine's lieutenant governor candidate is the thing I keep hearing.
Jason, as far as how the election itself went, the logistics, were there any glitches, major glitches or problems on election night, or did things run pretty smoothly compared to how they've run in the past?
Well, there was an hour and a half, I think it was, but there was at, 5:35, the precincts were in, and then everybody just sat there, and there was that was actually at that time, Dennis Dieters had a slight lead, and so there were, 20 more precincts to come in, and what
Took
I
forever.
Was... I did not confirm this. What I was told is that there's some kind of system where each precinct prints out a card, and that's what they officially turn in, and that one of the precincts lost that card, I guess, momentarily. But I, that's what I've been told.
To me, it seemed like a typical kind of Hamilton County count where it just goes in like spurts of blood, you know, and then finally it's finished. I mean, I called the Driehaus campaign when it looked like Dieters was still ahead, but there were 20 precincts out, most of them in the city. And I was like, so what do you guys, are you guys going to make it here? What do you think? And they said, well, we're not going to say anything until the morning, but we think these are going to be precincts that favor us. And we think we're going to get our lead back from Dennis. So,
yeah.
Jim Neal remains the Hamilton County Sheriff. Any surprises in that one?
No. No. I mean, Gary Lee, ran a good campaign. Jim Neal was another one that I felt like didn't really run much of a campaign. I know he refused, I think, several times to show up with Gary Lee together. I know he did that for one of our shows. But, I mean, he's a pretty popular guy, and no surprise there.
Chris wrote a column about Chris Wedderick. The Business Courier wrote a column about...
You guys are being very nice to each other, by the way. You're promoting each other's stories, I've noticed.
We're big fans of each other, Mark. Yeah. Come on.
You wrote about how the Trump... Because Neil, you know, showed up at the Trump rally ahead of the primary up in Westchester, and the Democrats got all up in arms. But then Chris came back and wrote about how that ultimately could end up helping him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know what? It might have, even though the county went for Hillary. His opponent couldn't use the Trump thing against him because his opponent was a Republican. So,
yeah, that's a really good point. I remember driving through the West Side and seeing signs for all of the Republican candidates in some front lawns, and also for Jim Neal.
Yeah. That was a whole funny situation because his neighbors had their Trump signs so close to his yard. I drove out there to look at it, and I was like, well, I can see why Seelbach thought that these were in his yard, but if you looked at the property line, it wasn't. But yeah, you know, Jim Neal is the kind of the anti-politician. You know, you just talk to him, and you know, it's just he kind of comes across as not getting it. I think he kind of does a Columbo act where it's like,
I think so. I think he's actually very engaged in politics, even though he talks a game like he's not, and he played sort of, oh, I'm sorry about the Trump thing, and maybe he was, like, but he had some he has some really smart people behind him, and I think he knows a little more about politics than what he lets on.
I've kind of said to people, I would like to have seen 3 ballot selfies from our county elected officials, Jim Neal's, Alex Triantafilou's, and Greg Hartman's, because all 3 of them made a big deal about how they were going to vote for their party's nominee, and I would love to have seen those ballots before they were put into the machine.
Hamilton County went for Hillary Clinton. What about in the Ted Strickland Rob Portman race? But how did it break down?
Strickland ran a horrible campaign that was over about 9 months ago. I mean, it was, you know.
But did Hamilton County go for Portman, or did they go
for
Strickland?
Oh, it went for Portman.
I think there were only, what was it, like 3 or 4 counties that went for Strickland? I mean, Hamilton County was not one of them, but there, you know, a few did.
I mean, it was just a rout. I mean, it was an embarrassing campaign, I think, for Governor Strickland. They made a big deal in Columbus about edging P.G. Sittenfeld, the city council member from Cincinnati who ran against Strickland. And I just don't even see how P.G. could have done worse than Strickland.
No.
It also shows, though, what kind of struggle that Democrats are going to have with regaining back what was once their base in white working class Ohioans and Americans everywhere. I mean, that was kind of Ted Strickland's bread and butter at one point. And Rob Portman beat him on that.
Yeah, beat him on the blue collar side, mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Now, I want to know about this one, because what is a county recorder? Because we had retired County Judge Norbert Nadel win that spot. What is that about? I think it's interesting.
Don't all jump at once.
Yeah, he came out of retirement.
Did anyone write a word about that
race? I think
race?
That's also one that's waiting on provisional ballots, right?
Is it?
Okay. I believe so.
You know, the funny thing about the only thing I noticed about that race, and I did no reporting on it, made no phone calls, nothing. So
that's,
I apologize.
Because you're saying, what's a county recorder?
I apologize in advance. But the thing that cracked me up about that race was Nadel's signs were giant and they were blue. And blue we associate with Democrats, and this was a Democratic year. I don't think it was a coincidence.
And a big name, and Nadel having been a judge for so many years, trial judge, and Wayne Coates didn't exactly run a very good campaign. And I also – oh, you asked about what the recorder's office does?
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, somewhat sarcastically. But
yeah. Basically, it's just that they control a big filing cabinet of deeds and real estate documents.
So
and
they
titles.
Record, they
and,
record documents.
Exactly.
I just thought it was interesting that Judge Nadel came out and ran for that. That was what caught my attention. Kind of like Chris, it's like, this is an interesting race just because of that.
I think he was forced to retire from the bench because
of
his age.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people don't want to retire from politics. They like doing it, and so, you know, he came back.
Funny thing is, the recorder's race was really interesting in the primary between Charlie Winburn and Nadel. That was really, really ugly, and probably the most ink that...
You mean Charlie Krueger?
Charlie Krueger, Freddy Krueger. That's probably the most ink that the recorder's race has ever received.
Yeah. We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WBXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WBXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're analyzing Tuesday's local elections and discussing what the results could mean to our region over the next several years. Joining us are Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterick, local politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer Jason Williams, and WCPO.com, WCPO insider government and political reporter Amanda Seitz. You can be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jordan and Mason joins us. Good afternoon, Jordan.
Good afternoon. My question is, I guess, in light of the election that we've seen, and especially the regional changes and the big changes that we've seen among white working class voters, Norwood is going into fiscal emergency once again. The Democrats now will have to manage the big fiasco that's coming up in terms of spending at the Metropolitan Sewer District project. Is it possible that we will see the same kind of backlash here locally with working class voters, especially our white working class in areas like Norwood, St. Bernard, across the west side, and you know, across the northern and eastern suburbs here in Cincinnati?
I just think, in light of Tuesday's results, I don't think we kind of see that backlash. In fact, I mean, Hamilton County turned so unexpectedly Democrat that it was really stood out on the map. So, you know, things can change in a couple of years, but I don't see evidence of that today.
It's always about the electorate, you know. I mean, the electorate in 2018 will be a lot different than the one in 2016. There'll be fewer Democratic base voters. And, I expect a guy like Chris Monzel, if he runs again, he can probably get reelected fairly easily. I think the fact of the matter is you have two of the commission seats up in presidential years, every presidential year. And so the party that turns out the most voters during that year is going to stay in charge, regardless of whatever happens. I think at MSD or anywhere else.
I mean, I just think that the county is just going to continue to get bluer and bluer, and I don't see the Republicans in the bigger picture being able to stop that.
Well, Jason, does in terms of how it breaks down, is the city the primary blue spot in Hamilton County, and then the suburbs and the rural areas are more red? Is that how it would look?
Correct, but the outlying areas are starting to get I mean, they're still red, but they're less red.
Yeah, and part of that light is because, you're seeing a lot of people that were Republican or that are Republicans moving out to the suburbs of Butler, Warren, and Claremont. I think Hamilton County lost 40,000 people, I believe, since Bush was elected. And then those counties gained a lot of people. So kind of can't make up those numbers.
And then nationwide, people sort themselves, right? Mm-hmm. They sort themselves in a way that kind of exacerbates these divisions that we have. I mean, the people, you know, did move out to the suburbs in droves, but we see kind of a reversal of that trend lately. Mm-hmm. And particularly in cities, yep. You see millennials moving in. You see people that, you know, that want to be in an urban environment, and they are almost universally Democrats.
Yep.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And let's talk to Steve in Springboro. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I had attended a Franklin Graham rally, get out the vote in Columbusville about 5-6 weeks ago prior to the election. And he did that in all 50 states. And I'd be curious to know if you have any data that shows the impact of evangelicals in the election in Ohio, and specifically in the Southwest Ohio area.
I know. I think there was a lot of concern among particularly pro-life Republicans that they might not turn out, given Donald Trump's history of supporting things like Planned Parenthood and abortion. He's not particularly a religious man. If he is, that hasn't come across a lot in this election. So there's a lot of concern, but there was also a lot of reaction among pro-life groups to get out the vote specifically and to really push hard on this idea that they shouldn't let the Supreme Court decisions lie with Hillary Clinton's. And I think that kind of worked on some level. I think it was a little bit of fear-mongering on some level, but I think it definitely pushed people to vote on Election Day.
I don't have any data on it, but I bet you anything it's in the exit polls. I was looking at other data in there, and there's all kinds of different ways you could cut up the electorate and figure out how different people voted. I think there is some question as to the accuracy of those polls, given the accuracy of other polls that we've seen, or lack thereof. I kind of worry that all the data that people are looking at is not particularly reliable, you know.
So let's talk about what happened with the Cincinnati Public Schools. They actually had a levy pass, and this was issue 44 on the ballot. What was the margin of victory on that, Jason?
I don't remember the final. I remember it was running like
60% range.
Yeah, it was 60-40 for the most of the night, roughly. I didn't check it right before I hung.
Me either.
It sat at 61% for the levy, and then 38% against.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got to eat some crow on this one. I thought this would be much closer. I thought it had a possibility of failing because mm-hmm. it was such a large property tax increase, and these are the same.
It was almost 8%. I think was the millage 7.9 something.
Eight millage. Yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah. You know, and people had just the year before. Again, though, this is where the different electorates come mm-hmm. in. But people just a year ago in the city of Cincinnati, whose boundaries largely mirror the school districts, they rejected a small 1 mil levy for the parks. So I kind of expected people to be a little bit more resistant to property taxes. But these guys ran a great campaign. They had a ton of money. They benefited from not having a really organized opposition. The Coast folks were formally opposed to it, but other than appearing on, you know, TV shows and radio, you know, I don't think they really put their back into trying to defeat this thing. So kudos to them.
Yeah, I thought it would be a lot closer as well. And I think even people working the campaign did too. So to have that type of margin is a big deal. But I think one of the other things too is that, you know, probably 8 months ago, people thought that this levy could have been headed for disaster. It's especially with possibly two levies, right, with preschool promise being its own and the school levy. And I think what really made the difference here was they got the business community on board. They got labor on board. So they kind of presented this plan. Everyone made a big compromise, and they got everyone on board and behind this levy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I'm most impressed about is you saw, well, I mean, when do you see big business Republicans and labor and, you know, at first, like, all come together, and you had all these other, the chamber got involved, and even at first it was kind of a mess between the preschool promise folks led by Greg Landsman, who will run for council and has a great shot at winning, and then you had the CPS folks who were very reluctant at first, and then so you got to give you don't see this kind of collaboration politically a lot around here, and I give them a lot of credit because you saw people from all factions of life come together and make this thing happen, and not just make it happen, but they made it happen big.
As far as the way the money's going to be used, it's I think it's $33 million. It's 5 years. It's going to generate $48 million each year. $33 million is going to be used by CPS. And then the remainder, the $15 million remainder, will be used for the preschool promise side. Is that correct?
I mean, it's not like the preschool promise gets a check for $15 million, but roughly, I mean, I would say it's $15 million to be used for the expansion of preschool. And some of that will go into preschool that already exists, is my understanding of it. I think it's also a lesson for people who want to expand the bus system, and improve public transportation next year. They're going to need business community sign on to it, or I don't know if they'll need it, but that it will help them immensely. And they kind of have it in a way already. The guy who led the task force that recommended expansion of in a different funding method for the bus system, George Vincent, he's the managing partner of Dinsmore and Scholl, which is a tremendously influential law firm here in town. So, you know, I think they kind of have the beginning of that, but they have a lot more work to make it happen.
They could use it. They could take a lesson, certainly from the issue 44 folks, on if they want to have any shot at passing a transit tax, which I think will be a lot harder. But I've eaten a lot of crow in the last few days. So,
I mean, the main difference between that transit tax would go through the whole county, and issue 44 was basically just the city, and you have a few precincts in Green Township and some other suburban communities that are in CPS, but vast majority is within the city.
That bus tie, that's when I think you will see
Coast
just come strong to the mic on that one.
Well, especially because at least last time I checked, it was going to be a sales tax. Was the favored position on that, and it's the last of the sales tax.
And as we wrap things up, Covington mayor's race, Joe Meyer ran as the change candidate against the incumbent Covington Mayor Sherry Caron, and he won. What are your thoughts on that race, Jason?
My thoughts are that Joe Meyer, who's certainly was a former, I think, state senator and was the head of the Department of Education, I believe, in the state of Kentucky, was one of the main leaders on the Brent Spence Bridge anti-toll movement, and really, there was a lot of talk about the anti-tolls thing for a while, and then he comes along and forms this group called Northern Kentucky United, and that's when it really, I think, got organized and took off, and so I think that probably helped him in that race.
Yeah. What do you see happening to Covington under his leadership?
I'm not that plugged in with that, so I do think that they will try to continue to build up their riverfront. I think they'll try to continue to fight against Brent Spence tolls, but I think they'll also be in favor of trying to build a new bridge.
Well, Chris, Amanda, and Jason, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wederick, local politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer Jason Williams, and WCPO.com government and political reporter Amanda Seitz. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier, with help from Belinda Kai, the assistant producer, and Dave Shermer was our technical director. Even though Black Friday is no longer the busiest sales day of the year, it's still the traditional start of the holiday shopping season. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll discuss Black Friday and how to make sure that sale price is really a good deal. We'll also look at why more people are dining out. And in Focus on Technology, new research shows how a knee injury changes your brain. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.